All right, so we're going to be Ezra chapter 8 and verses 21 through 23 this morning. And I'm just going to read the text for you, and then we're just going to get directly after it this morning. And we'll just see what the Lord will have. Are you ready? All right. It says, "Then I proclaimed the fast at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before God to seek from him a safe journey for ourselves and our children and all our goods. I was ashamed to ask the king for a band of soldiers and horsemen to protect us." Oh, I gotta swallow just a second. "Against the enemy on our way, since we had told the king, the hand of our God is for good on all those who seek him, and the power of his wrath is against all who forsake him. And so we fasted and we implored God for this, and then he listened to our entreaty." All right. Was that pretty distracting? Yes. All right. There's my calories. Okay. Life is full of distractions, and it's hard to get through to the main thing that was the main thing. The most important thing that I just did was read the scriptures, and yet you were distracted by my chewing and smacking, probably, especially if you have a problem with that, Rebecca. And my chewing and the music, the background, Jesus Freak, even though it was a Christian song, that probably didn't add more help for you to understand or listen or tune in to God's word. Am I wrong? No? No, I don't think so. You were probably very distracted as I read all that. And this morning, I wanted to talk to you about that exact kind of distraction. This week, this just happened to me. And this is my actual dashboard. And if you can not see, every single light that could be lit up on my dash is lit up. Now, you might say, "So is that the last time you drove your car ever?" And I say, "No, this is just how it runs all the time." Okay, and here's what happens. If you put gas in the car, and for whatever reason, you know, it's like, hey, tighten the gas cap all the way to one click. Otherwise, who knows what'll happen. So I do that, but inevitably, all of the lights always turn on. Now, whether or not this actually means that all of those things are broken and not working, I don't know, because they always come on, and so I just ignore them. I totally ignore them. Something could be devastatingly wrong with all that is in my car, and I just wouldn't know because I've just become accustomed to seeing this, right? And so in order to prevent myself from paying attention to what's most important in my car, I just turn on the radio. How many of you guys are radio listeners in the car? Yeah, I just turn something on, and then I find I don't actually pay much attention to what's on the dashboard. But the one thing I do actually pay attention to is the gas. Right? Because when the gas gauge is down, then I know I have a problem. So once that's down, I get out and I fill up the gas tank again, and then this cycle repeats. And these lights have never turned off. Now, something likely is broken in my car, but I just assume that it's going to work and it's good. And this is what happens in our hearts and our lives. We turn up the music. We find ways to distract ourselves from the important messages that are always being relayed to us from the vital areas of our spirit. And we take some other things for granted, like, hey, so long as I keep this thing gassed up, everything's going to be fine. I'll just ignore this message. And so this is what happens. And this morning, I want to talk to us through the word of God, through Ezra's experience about how to cut away from the distractions and actually tune in to what God is conveying to us all the time. There's a constant reality that is true. If I don't pay attention to whatever these messages mean, inevitably something will break in my car. And if you don't pay attention to the spiritual things that are going on in your heart, the messages that are being communicated, something will devastatingly break in your life. And then you'll in an emergency way, try to fix all of that. But you could, in the meantime, not do the emergency repair and just pay attention, cut through some of the distraction in your life and find yourself in tune with what God is saying. So we have to do that by turning down the distractions of our world, of our flesh. The constant overriding demand on you to fill yourself with pleasure, to distract yourself from everything else that is good and right, something that you should tune into, and you just distract yourself with stuff, with things, with demands, with needs that are really needs, but they're not your main need. They're not your overriding critical need. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read it in a more respectful way this morning. Are you ready? So that everybody can hear. I'll read verses 21 through 23, and then I'll pray. Ezra says, "Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God to seek from him a safe journey for ourselves, our children, and all our goods. I was ashamed to ask the king for a band of soldiers and horsemen to protect us against the enemy on our way. Since we had told the king, the hand of our God is for good on all those who seek him, and the power of his wrath is against all who forsake him. And so we fasted and we implored our God for this, and he listened to our entreaty." Our Father, our God, we come this morning, people that are distracted. We have not just needs, but wants, things that we have our minds fixed on, our hearts fixed on, everything, but probably what our most glaring need is, which is to tune our hearts and our minds to you, Father, this morning. So I pray that this morning your word would do its work in us, through us. I just ask that you would help our flesh to decrease this morning and our faith to increase. Pray for your help in doing this. So give us the preparation in our hearts and our ears and our eyes and our minds to receive what you would implant this morning by your word. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. So Ezra's declaring a fast over the people. And if we read this as a prescriptive text in something to this effect, if you want protection, if you want fulfillment, if you want some kind of help over your goods and your children and yourself, you know, just follow these steps and then God will provide everything that you ask for. It's not a prescriptive text in that way. It is it's example. It's a descriptive text of what Ezra did in a faithful way. He faithfully led the people in a fast to humble themselves before God. And so there's three really large topics. And if I was to focus on any one of them, this could be a several week series. So this morning I'm going to put the blinders on and just focus on what I think the meat of this should and could convey to us, which is essentially this. For your faith to match your testimony, which is I trust God. He's better than food. My faith is in him. My life does not come from my own fulfillments, the stuff that I put in myself. I don't save myself. I have no self-righteousness. If that's true, if that's a testimony out of your mouth, your faith should match that. But often we don't catch the mismatch because of the fleshly distractions. The flesh just is everything that is temporal, things that will not last, stuff that will decay. Right? So it's everything from your physical needs, your food and water and air and all the stuff that you intake because your body is decomposing. But it's also just the little treasures that we wrap our hearts and our fingers around and hold tightly to them as though they give us value. Those things too are fleeting. And we need to cut through and minimize those distractions. We need to cut down on the flesh so that our faith will increase and then our testimony matches our faith. So that's what's being conveyed here this morning. And so I'm going to hit mostly the prayer and the fasting aspect because these two go hand in hand. And then the provision and protection aspect comes a little bit more in the next couple of verses as we close out chapter 8. So that's where we're headed. Are you ready? Okay, here we go. In verse 21, I have broken down and emphasized for you the purpose in Ezra's mind and heart why they would ever do anything in a delay sense. They've collected all the goods from the king. They've got all the people they need. They've now procured some Levites, we're told, by the good hand of God on them as they respond to the word of, hey, we need some servants in the temple. And yet they delay again because it says, then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava that we might, and the key here is now for the purpose of humbling ourselves, to humble ourselves before our God, to seek from him a safe journey. Why? For ourselves and for our children and all of our goods. That's the emphasis. Now, I'm going to highlight for you the key phrases and words and in a sense that it will provide a contrast to a different fast that was just held a few decades before this. So here it is. The key word is a fast here, that we might humble ourselves. It's for the purpose of decreasing so that we recognize what's always been true. We are not the providers or sustainers of ourselves. We must humble ourselves before that reality, before our God. He belongs to us. He's called us his own, and we're going to claim him back and to seek from him something, not from the king, not from ourselves. We're going to seek from him a safe journey. And if you want to just kind of note it in your brain, it literally means a straight way. The thing that God's always calling people to do. Don't go to the left. Don't go to the right. Follow the straight path. It's a straight way. And so that's generally translated as a safe journey, because he wants to know, he wants to discern by God's hand the right way through the wilderness, the best way to go. And why is he doing this? Well, because we have ourselves to worry about. We have these children who are dependent on us, these little ones, and we have all of these goods. We have a lot of stuff that's been entrusted to us to get to Jerusalem. And so that's what they beseech God for. So here's a contrast, though, that just happened. In the book of Esther, as we find that crisis moment being introduced where there's a decree that all the Jews are going to be killed on a certain day for anybody that was willing to do it, and Esther's been faced with this dilemma. Will she go in before the king who she's not been invited to? And here it is in Esther chapter 4. And then I just want you to know in your mind the contrast of Ezra and Esther. Esther says, go gather all the Jews found in Susa, that's just the region, and hold a fast, not to God, but on my behalf. Hold a fast on my behalf and do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my young women will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king. We're not seeking God. We're going to seek the king's favor on this. I will go to the king, though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. Now, what Ezra resolves at the end of his word is, we entreated God for this and he listened. He listened to our asking, our coming to him. And Esther, on the other hand, contrasts that with, well, you know, it's up to the hands of fate. You know, if I die, I die. Oh, well, we don't know if the king will listen or not. And so we have Esther's lack of faith compared to Ezra's faithful response. Ezra is just an example of faithfulness in the light of a context, a situation. They're really given kind of two things. Some unknown traveling some thousand miles with goods and people. Ezra's just like, hey, the only way we're going to get through this with any kind of guarantee of safety or help is going to be by God. Esther, on the other hand, is like, who knows who will help us? And I'll just do it. You guys fast on my behalf, and we'll just see how this shakes out. Now, I told you this before as we walked through kind of the parallels between Esther and Ezra, but Esther never mentions the name of God. It just draws on your knowledge that whoever is going to be in charge of whether or not this works out is truly God, but Esther never explicitly mentions him. Even in fact, when she declares the fast, she never says, and pray. She just says, fast on my behalf, and we'll see how it shakes out. So Ezra explicitly acknowledges that the purpose of the fast is to humble themselves, to empty themselves of any reality that they think they have where they're in control of their own fate, or that fasting itself would in fact guarantee them some end. It's specifically for the purpose of seeking God. And so the question here is, why does God honor both of those requests? He happens to honor Esther's let me back that up. I won't say he honored Esther. He still provides a way through. He still provides preservation of the people. But in Ezra's case, it's explicit, and we're able to attach it to God's hand. And that's important, because faithfulness requires that sort of knowledge, that explicit acknowledgement that it's God's hand that's doing this. Now, fasting in terms of history in the secular realm is literally just to afflict yourself. It's to afflict your body so as to draw attention to yourself or to let others know that you're in mourning or something's going wrong. And so that's essentially what is happening in Esther. It's just a way of physically externalizing something that you feel on the inside. If you were to search fasting right now, just go on Google, all of the top results have nothing to do with religious fasting. It's all about fashionable things like losing weight or getting in tune with your psyche. And yet, God has a redeeming purpose in fasting. And so we need to kind of dig underneath that this morning and see what that redeeming purpose is. They want to seek from him a best way, a safe journey. They want to know from God, what is the way that you would have us go in this wilderness? How would we navigate on our own? Is there some better way that we ought to do this? It's your way, God, not my way. That's explicitly mentioned. It's the turning over of self. So the humility is the overriding purpose. And if you don't start there, you will never end in the right place in fasting. The purpose is to have yourself decrease, your flesh decrease, so that you will be more in tune with what God is saying and doing. Now, Jesus tells us there's an inappropriate way to handle these spiritual disciplines. He actually addresses three spiritual disciplines in Matthew chapter 6. He addresses giving, he addresses praying, and he addresses fasting. And so I want to track with that Jesus' words very quickly through Matthew chapter 6 to point out some things. So here we go. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus makes this warning at the beginning of the whole dialogue that we are familiar with of some warnings. He says, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. And that key there is in order to be seen by others. So in the secular sense, fasting is for the only purpose that other people would recognize what's going wrong with you, right? So the purpose is to draw attention to yourself in the secular world. Now, Jesus takes that and he says, if you're doing something that is spiritual in order to be seen by others, you've missed the point. So he says, beware of practicing righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. So that's sort of the overriding context of all the things that Jesus is about to unpack. And then he says, thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. Well, he says, if you give so that others will recognize that you're giving, and they go, isn't that guy righteous? Or isn't he so sacrificial? Or isn't she so great? Right? If you're doing something for the purpose of other people recognizing how good you are, you've missed the reward. He says, when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. So there's the contrast. If you do it so other people see you, there's no reward. But if you do it in a secret way, then God, who knows what happens in secret, he'll be your reward, or he will reward you. Okay, well, he says, and when you pray, now he's going to move to praying. And when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners, that they may be what? Seen. They may be seen by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. So if you want other people to look at you and say, isn't he holy, right? Like the Pharisee that prays, God, I thank you. I'm not like all these other fools because I'm so great. And if you pray that way so that other people recognize how good you are, then you have received your reward, because they look at you and go, man, I could never be like you, and that's as good as it's going to get. But when you pray, go into your room, shut the door, and pray to your Father who is what? In secret, again, and your Father will, who sees in secret, will reward you. It's, are you catching the theme here? Don't do it to be seen. Do it because God can see what's in secret. And when you pray, do not heap up empty phrases, the Gentiles do, because they think they will be heard. Now, first he said, don't pray in public with your hands raised on the street corner so that you're seen, but also don't just keep speaking so that people will hear you, or thinking that you will be heard for your many words. God, 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 please, 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 whatever the repetitious phrase is, thinking that that will help you be heard. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you even ask him. And there's a key word. Whatever you think that you're going to pray to God about and inform him for, Jesus says he already knows what you need. So you actually, in fact, aren't asking to inform him what you need. You're doing it for your benefit, to remind that you're not producing that. It's asking God for what he gives. Then he goes on to unpack the Lord's Prayer. He says, instead, when you pray, pray like this, our Father, and so on and so forth. I'm going to skip those verses to get to verse 16. And now he gets to fasting. When you fast, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites. That word is actors. Do not look like the hypocrites who put on, they disfigure their faces. Their fasting may be seen by others. Again, truly I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you fast, anoint your head, wash your face, that your fasting may not be seen by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Okay. So he's given all these contrasts. And remember, the overarching purpose was, he says, don't practice righteousness to be seen. Seek the Father who sees and hears and knows everything in secret, and that will be your reward. And you say, okay, I think I'm tracking with that. And now he's going to give a kind of a final contrast in verse 19. Here it goes. Do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Now, this verse does mean just regular stuff. Don't grab for stuff. Don't save stuff. It's gonna rot. It will leave you wanting. You will not find eternal happiness in those things. Yes, it means that. But he's saying all of this right after he talked about what is the reward for people that pray in public and fast and disfigure their faces and give to be seen. Their reward is the congratulations of people. And he says that might inflate your flesh to make you feel secure and feel good about yourself. You can lay up that treasure, but that's the wrong kind of treasure. So if you treasure that, your reward can be had here, and it's the most you're going to get. But then he's going to contrast it. There's a better treasure, a lasting treasure, but lay up for yourself treasures in heaven, where neither moth or rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. Okay? So get the contrast here. If your desire is to be seen and have your flesh fulfilled with other people thinking you're great or righteous or self-righteous, then you can have that. But there's a better place to lay treasure, a kind of treasure that you can have because your Father sees in secret and he knows in secret and he hears every secret thing and knows before you ask. And if you beseech him, come to him, humble yourself before him, you're laying up treasures with him. And then we get to the last famous verse, which you know, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, so often, and let me just reverse this. In fact, I'll just say it this way. If you find yourself wanting people to congratulate you, to affirm you, to lay up treasures in earth, that's where your heart is. Your heart is to be patted and loved by people. That's what you serve. Your heart is your source of desire, and you will pursue it at any cost to fill it. But Jesus says, if your heart is set on a better desire, that's where your treasure will be. So the key here is that you've got to fix the desire portion. The desire portion is a spiritual problem, not a flesh problem. But the flesh problem is the thing that we desire and we fill ourselves to. We are slaves to our flesh. Now, some of those things are just survival. I got to eat to live, right? I got to have shelter. I got to have clothes. But Jesus addresses those things, and he says, God knows that you need all of those things. But isn't life more than that? He says, don't be anxious. Don't be seeking those things, because that's not the point. So we have the contrast of flesh, rewards, and desires, and spiritual desires. Now, spiritual disciplines in this case, praying, giving, fasting, serve as a counterweight to the felt fleshly desires of your heart. They're a counterweight. They're a way of forcing yourself to practice what is spiritually true. And it forces you to humble yourself. And if you just want to think of humbling as reducing your flesh, giving up your fleshly desires, giving humbles us because we say, I will not rely on my own supply. I will give away more than I think I need to survive because I trust God is my provider. And you have to humble yourself to do that, because everything in you says, but what about the rainy day that's coming? Or what about the emergency that, right? And that's a fleshly desire. You want to secure for yourself a future. And giving forces you to humble yourself, to say, I will trust God for whatever comes, but I'm going to give. So as a spiritual discipline, giving serves as that counterbalance to your desire to acquire, to secure for yourself a future. Praying humbles yourself. It says, I have to seek another who I rely on, even though I fail to do it significantly most of the time, recognizing that my very next breath is contingent upon the God's good grace to give it to me. Praying forces you to humble yourself to that awareness. I rely on God. I must seek him for what I need, my desire. Fasting humbles us in the greatest way, because it takes the core of our flesh, which is, I've got to live. And the only way I can live is to feed my belly, to feed my appetite. And so when we fast, we put that away, we avoid it, so that we can say what's really true, which is I don't sustain myself just merely by bread alone, which is what Jesus says, but it's truly by God. And so we have to humble ourselves to say, I'm going to physically manifest what has always been true. I'm alive because God says I'm alive. And he says, I will give you tomorrow or I won't give you tomorrow. And that's why James gives that warning. You guys are planning about next year? Woe to you. Like, you should say, well, if we live, then we'll try to go do this or that. Okay? So there's how all of those spiritual disciplines work to counterbalance our fleshly desires. So fasting, in particular, is always married with prayer. Because as we fast to deprive ourselves of what we most desire, we replace that or substitute it with prayer and seeking God. Why? Because we're depending on him for something and we must seek him. And so as we reduce the distractions, we turn down the music and I stop chewing in your ear, we tune into the fact that all the lights are turned on the dashboard. And so we seek God in prayer. And we say, I need to tune into the reality that I actually depend on you for all of my needs. Are you tracking? Okay, verse 22. Ezra is going to, in hindsight, intimate for us a testimony that he's given to God, to the king about God. He says, I was ashamed to ask the king, that's King Artaxerxes, for a band of soldiers and horsemen to protect us against the enemy on our way. Since we had told the king, the hand of our God is for good on all who seek him, and the power of his wrath is against all who forsake him. Now, the second half of this verse is an absolute truth. Part of the covenant of Israel was, if you follow me and keep covenant with me, I will protect you, I will bless you with material stuff. And in this way, what Ezra says here is not instructive for us in the new covenant, okay? But he still serves as an example of testimony and then the faith that must follow that testimony. Ezra has told the king what is true. God is for good on all those who seek him. And all those who want to come against him or try to kill his people, he will bring wrath against them. And in fact, that's why we're here right now, right? That's why they're in discipline, but God wrecked the nation that disciplined them. That would be Assyria and Babylon. Those nations have fallen as God said, I will bring my hand back against you. So what he's testified to is true. So here's what he's saying. I was ashamed. And the reality here is this. What he's said about God is if he doesn't follow that up with action, then he will bring shame upon his testimony. Now, you and I, if you profess to be a Christian, probably regularly bring shame on our own testimony. When, in fact, we don't actually trust God for the things that we say we trust him for. We trust him for eternal life, but if we're trusting him for groceries next week, that's a different story I provide for myself. Right? And the argument from the greater to the lesser doesn't seem to apply in those cases. And in this case, the problem is with us and the fact that we're okay when our testimony does not match our faith. Or I should say the other way, our faith doesn't match our testimony. God is for good. We know that. That's Romans 8. God works together, all things together for the good of those who love him and who are called according to his purpose. So in that sense, we can trust that promise in the same way that Ezra is declaring this promise. So whatever it is that I encounter, whatever problem I'm about to face, we should seek whatever God's way is to go through that. And that we would trust him that whatever the outcome is or whatever happens in the middle will be for my good or his glory. And those are not mutually exclusive. So the foundation of our faith is the commitment to God as our treasure, not ourselves. Not our acquiring things, not our supply for ourselves. So you cannot serve your flesh in what it craves and also serve God in faith spiritually and have those two things be in contrast to one another. Jesus simply says, like, you have not because you ask not, and that is his invitation to seek God spiritually. So here's the revelation for us. The thing that we have to like set our spiritual eyes on and our physical eyes is that God's glory is central to our purpose. So we take some things for granted, right? Like I look at my dashboard and I take for granted that so long as I maintain the gas tank, everything else will work out, right? I take that for granted, while at the same time, I ignore all of the flashing Christmas tree that's on my dashboard telling me there's a problem. Now, sometimes what we need is those lights to communicate something to us superficially. There's a problem in the engine, but the problem is not the light. But that's how we look at things. The problem is not the light. The problem is signaling you to something underneath the light. It's telling you something else going on in the engine. It's the superficial manifestation of the deeper problem. But we look at our problems and think those are the problem. And when we realign our thinking and our seeking to that reality, things look differently. So our felt want or our felt need, the felt problem, oh no, the lights are on my dashboard, and what specific light is lit up right now, helps us to then dig underneath that and then find what is being said to us or what the actual problem is. Now, we can see that light up, and you can do like me and just turn up the radio and look forward, right? But if you fast, you turn down the radio and you focus in on that thing and you look up the owner's manual and you take it to the auto show, right? That's what fasting does. It turns down the distraction and you pay attention to what's there and then you seek what's underneath it. Now, the superficial level says something like this. I'm sick, I'm unable, I'm broke, I'm worried, I'm single, I'm depressed, I'm angry, I'm overlooked, I'm addicted, I'm failing. All of those are lights on the dashboard. And if you just say something like, God, I'm sick, help me not to be sick, that's not the problem. God, I'm single, give me a mate. God, I'm depressed, make me happy. You're just praying for the antithesis of what you feel in your flesh. The flesh is the manifestation of an emotional and spiritual truth. Emotions aren't unreal. They are real things that God's given us to help us clue into what's going on spiritually. So just praying for the superficial antithesis of the problem that you feel is not to uncover the problem. It's just to go back to the distraction and hope that you can cover up the lights with some electrical tape and move on your way. That's effectively what we do when we just pray superficially. Let me help you maybe with some deeper prayers that will connect both to God's glory and your need, so that you turn down the distraction and then you humble yourself to the reality of what's going on underneath the light. Our prayers ought to be, I'm sick, I'm struggling, I want to be well, but God, those are not my hope. God, show me your goodness in spite of how I feel. God, bring me to root my help and my strength on you and not in how I feel. God, don't put my hope in a spouse. Put it in you, right? The underlying need is so much greater than just, God, fix the problem that I feel. But you don't get there because you want to cover it up or distract yourself with the fleshly fulfillment. And the purpose of fasting and seeking is to humble yourself and say, God, show me where the problem really is. And it always starts here, the superficial desire of the flesh. Paul unpacks this various places, Galatians 5, Romans 7, when he's having that famous argument, God, the good I want to do, I don't do, and then the things I don't want to do, I do them, right? That whole argument. He says this, because I know that no good thing dwells in me, that is my flesh. Because the desires of the spirit and the desires of the flesh are at war with one another. What am I going to do? Who will save me from this problem? Then he goes on to extol, well, blessed be Jesus Christ, who is our hope. So he resolves on that truth, but this is the underlying core value. You are encased in flesh. It requires things of you. You have to feed yourself. Like, that's a true need. You do have to shelter yourself, and maybe you have other responsibilities like children, right? Ezra's acknowledging these things. We've got goods, we've got children, we got ourselves. God, but we entrust ourselves to you, and so we're just going to seek from you the best way. Right? That desire is actually at war with the deeper spiritual desire that should be, God, if you see fit to have us set on by some robbers on the way and take all of our stuff, and man, just to you be the glory. We don't pray like that, do we? right? But that's the truth under God. We just humble ourselves, and whatever the best way is, to God be the glory, right? So that's what's happening here. That's what Ezra's done. We humble ourselves. I was ashamed to ask because I've testified that God's good. And whatever his hand does, that's right. But if he carries us through, then that's the right thing. I said that God is good. Now, here's where we should not take what Ezra does as prescriptive again. It's not that in every case, if you have the opportunity to avail yourself of some protection or help or somebody gives you something, that you shouldn't take it because it's not directly from God. It didn't fall out of heaven. That's not what's happening here. It's that Ezra has already testified. He's already said, here's what God is like. And if he should go seek from the king protection, horses, men, army, whatever, then who's going to take credit for their safe journey? The king is. So Ezra's sort of, if you want to say it this way, put it out there already. He's already put it out there, and God is going to honor that. Now, in contrast to that, we have Nehemiah, who in the next book also is going to go back to Jerusalem from Persia, and he gets an escort. He takes an escort from the king, and he's protected on the way. So we have just two contrasts of the ways that God provides. He just happened to provide by having them not set upon, and in Nehemiah's case, he had protection. But in either case, it's trusting yourself to whatever God provides. So it's humbling yourself to that testimony and then making sure that the action that follows that is true. So I told the king that you were a powerful God and that his wrath is whoever would come against us. And then he just goes with the action plan. And so we fasted. We actually did it. We didn't just think about humbling ourselves. We said, you know what would be good? You know what would show how much we love God, right? They did what they were called to do, which was to humble themselves. And we implored God for this, the best way. We implored him to help us, and he listened to our entreaty. And I'm gonna point out something. He doesn't say he listened to our entreaty because no one attacked us. He's merely saying God hears, which is exactly what Jesus said. If you wanna pray, you don't have to pray on the street corner. You don't have to repeat yourself. God already knows what you need. So go in your secret place, and God who hears in secret and sees in secret will hear you. He knows. So we can go with that confidence. God hears what we ask. So fasting, prayer go hand in hand, right? We seek him, we humble ourselves, we fast so that we can tune into what our true needs are, and he listens. So God is not acting because Ezra forced his hand. Fasting is not a hunger strike in order to force God's hand. Well, you did that, so what can I do but give you what you asked for? That's not what happens. God did not change his mind about protection or not protection because Ezra had done this thing. It is an example of how to faithfully deal with the fact that we have desires in the flesh and how to honor God with entrusting our flesh to him, but then be in tune with a greater spiritual reality that everything that we do in the flesh is contingent upon his giving it. So, is protection, safety, longevity, all of those things, are they guaranteed? Well, no. But what is guaranteed is that whatever you need to make it through in faith, God will give you. Whatever supply that you need to get through, to be faithful and honor God, he will give you. Now, in Ezra 8 and then in verse 31, he clues us in to the fact that it's God who granted this. We didn't think the best way ourselves. We didn't plan it on the map. We didn't have fighters who protect us on the way. And at verse 31, he says, the hand of God was on us, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy and from ambushes on the way. So that's it. He was good to us, he protected us, and it's God's hand that did this. So here's where we're going to tune in and where I'll conclude. We're mostly indifferent to that last piece. I mean, it's God's hand always on us. It's God's hand that's always moving. I've already said this. It's God's will that he gives you your next breath. It's contingent on him. He's providing, he's delivering, he's sustaining. Like, that's all God's work. And rarely do we tune into that value until something goes wrong. Right? Until we go, those lights were on the dashboard for a while and then the engine blew up, right? And then suddenly it's like, Lord, fix my car, right? That's us. Then all of a sudden, we're all about prayer, all about seeking God, all about looking introspectively about, well, maybe I did mess that, right? The thing about fasting is it flips that to not be the emergency way. It puts it on the front end. That says, I want to recognize what's true on the front end so that my faith matches my testimony. God, I love you. I trust you. Fasting is not about acquiring something spiritual that you do not have. We know this because Jesus fasted, right? Jesus lacked nothing spiritually. So when he fasts and he prays and he goes without, he's tempted in that state because everything in his body would have said, sustain yourself, fix your situation, protect yourself, right? All of the things that he's presented with are fleshly things, fleshly satisfactions. Hey, be honored by people. You know, fill your belly, right? All of those things are things that he could have granted himself, but he refuses so that he was tested and tried in the same ways that we are in the flesh and yet without sin. James tells us that it's our desires, our fleshly desires, that drag us away when we're tempted. And so we have to battle against those. We have to war against our flesh. We have to crush it down and defeat it so that what is spiritually true may rise up, may be greater than our flesh. We have to reduce our flesh and turn up our faith, and that comes by way of fasting. Now, I'm going to dump on you. Are you ready? Well, get ready. On your sermon notes this morning, there's just the acronym, FAST, F-A-S-T. I'm going to, not that you have to remember all these, not even that they're exhaustive. I'm just going to dump on you this principles of fasting, and hopefully as you're thinking about this, ongoingly, you will remember what's key to them that you might employ them in your own life. So the first one is F. Fasting is formal in the sense that it must be official. If you just go, oh, maybe I will, maybe I won't, you will never be accountable to it. You have to actually say, I'm going to do this, and here's what I'm going to do. Here's how long it's going to be. This is the goal, if you want to think of it that way, that I'm setting it out. It has to be a formal thing. You're going to forego something that you would rather have in your life and in your flesh. And the purpose of this is to turn your what? Faith up and your flesh down. That's F. A, you are going to abstain from your temptations. Different people have different temptations. Some of those are, food is the easy one because it's the nearest satisfaction to us. Some of you guys eat your feelings sometimes, yeah, maybe. Some of you guys just eat because it's fun, some because it tastes good. But nobody eats for survival that's in this room. I mean, you benefit from survival, but nobody eats daily for survival three times a day. You don't need it, right? So you have to abstain from something that you would rather take part in. You have to acknowledge that the reason that you're doing this is because God is the counterweight to that. I would like to feed my belly right now, but I need to sustain myself on God. I would like to, right? Whatever that thing is, you have to acknowledge that God is the counterweight. He's truly the need that you need to fill. S, the purpose is that we would find our satisfaction not in our flesh, but in spiritual things. It is something that is a sacrifice. You know, whenever Lent rolls around, if you're one of those Lent people and you're like, hey, I'm giving up smoking. You're like, I didn't know you smoked. I don't, right? So the idea of giving up something that is not a problem for you is not helpful, right? It should be a sacrifice. You're going to forego something that is meaningful to you. It's sacrificial in nature. And you're going to substitute that sacrifice with seeking God. Whatever that activity is, whatever that thing is, you replace it with reading the word, praying, seeking God in place of that thing. And the last one, I cheated a little, follow through. That's T. Follow through means that just like we see here at the end of Ezra, and we fasted. Now, you can make all the commitments and all the plans and plan all the stuff that you're going to do, but if you don't actually do that thing, you've not become accountable for it, right? So if you set out to do it, do not make a rash vow, right? Don't just say, I'm going to fast for all week and then not follow through, right? That's not the right way to think about this. And the purpose is to turn down distractions, turn down the thing that's telling you, eat, eat, eat. And replace it to tune into God's truth. Why? So that your testimony matches your faith. That's the purpose, okay? So with that out there, I'm going to challenge you, and then I'll speak to you. I'm going to challenge you this week to fast. You say, how long? That's between you and God. But here's where I would like you to put it in your week. If you're going to fast for a day, it would be best to fast from Friday. Don't eat Friday dinner. Fast all day Saturday. And then next Sunday, when we come together, we get a breakfast potluck together. And we break your fast all together as a community to God. And then we take communion together as a church. That would be awesome if you're going to do one day. Now, the reason why I say skip dinner Friday is because here's your temptation. I thought of it on the way here, so I know you're going to have it. I'll just eat a big dinner on Friday, and you hardly won't feel it on Saturday, right? If you're somebody that goes without food regularly, I don't eat breakfast or lunch, and then I kind of have dinner, like, you need to see that and see what's true and then forego something that's sacrificial to you. So it might look different. Now, if you have a true medical need, I cannot fast. Here's what that looks like. Whatever the bare minimum nutritionally that you need to make that work, it should be something that's not like, hey, I need to have, let's just say, saltines versus donuts, right? Don't go for the thing that makes you feel good and happy. Go for the thing that is the minimum of what it would take to make sure that you don't have a medical event and use that. You tracking? And some of you need to add something else to that. Some other thing that you're going to sacrifice. I'm not going to social media. I'm not going to Netflix. I'm not, right? Whatever the distraction is that you turn up so that you are constantly unaware of the deeper spiritual need, that's what you need to pray to God about and seek him this week on. So that's my challenge to you. Now, I'll just speak to you about the next few moments, okay? We're going to move to communion. And before you pop up and come grab anything, right? Here's the reality that's under any of this. If you cannot fast without becoming embittered, like if you feel like, why would Mitch ask me to do that? Don't do it. But that's the only reason you shouldn't do it. That's the only reason. If you cannot do it without becoming embittered and feeling that I've put it upon you. Because your first objection will be the superficial fleshly objection. I'd rather not do that. That's the flesh talking, not the spirit, okay? So before you pop up this morning to come grab the elements, I'll ask you to hold on to those until everybody's been served this morning. I want you to think, am I going to participate in this week? And if so, I want you to make that commitment before you come up here and take communion, before you grab the elements today. If you're not going to fast, that's okay. Just say, I can't do it because I'll be embittered and maybe the Lord will work on you this week and you'll change your mind. But make the commitment. I want you to do it now before the rest of the service proceeds, okay? So I'll inform you for that. But the main purpose is to turn down the distractions in your life and to tune into God and to seek him. And there's never a bad time. You don't always need a crisis event, and that's the point, right? It's just good. It's good to tell our flesh no. To mortify the flesh. That means to kill things, the desires that drag you away from just trusting in God for what you need. So I'm going to pray, and then we'll just have a song going while you can come up and get the elements as that song goes. Once everybody's been served this morning, we'll take communion together and finish in song. Our Father God, the truth is that we need you more than bread. We need you more than shelter and clothing and all of the things that we fill our hearts and our minds with to distract us from the reality that we are just dependent on you for all things. And God, you're good to us.